Hey y'all, quick content warning before today's episode. We discuss themes of sexual violence throughout this episode, but there is a chunk of time where we talk about it more in depth. You can go over to the show notes and see the timestamps for that. But otherwise, enjoy the show.
Who do you call
when all that you see
are actors on your television singing off key?
What savvy, well-versed heroes can settle the score? Once more with TV.
Welcome, Daymen and Nightmen, to Once More with TV, a podcast celebrating TV musical episodes from the sublime to the subprime.
And definitively ranking them using every theater child's worst nightmare math.
I'm your co-host, Alex Kubnatsky, he, him, and I am a drowsy chaperone enthusiast.
And I'm your co-host, Liza Trushel, she, her, and I think I know who Pepe Sylvia is.
Whoa.
I think it's Charlie not being able to read, and it's the word Pennsylvania.
That's actually very good.
Yeah, that's my theory. I'm sticking to it.
And appropriate, we watched It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, season 4, episode 13, The Nightman Cometh. It's premiered in November 20th, 2008. Liza, what's your relationship to the show, Always Sunny?
Wow, this coming out in 2008 makes me feel, I can feel my bones creaking when you say that and turning to dust. It's Always Sunny. I mean, it's been on forever. It's a very fun show. I will say I've watched a lot of It's Always Sunny. I cannot watch a lot of it at once because everybody on it is a monster. And there's something, it's a very, like, the humor on this is dark, like, black humor. It is really, like, the joke is how terrible these people are. And I'm just such a sensitive little bean that I can't watch more than, like, two episodes at once without getting really grim about, like, the future of humanity. If you're going to find me binging a show about Philadelphia, it will be Abbott Elementary, not this one.
A little more hopeful.
Yeah, a little more hopeful. But it is, I mean, it's a very funny show. So I have seen a good percentage of it. How about you?
I mess with what you say heavy there, because it is one of those things where they are so good at writing these horrible people that it feels very real. And it, you know, as absurd as it is, it can kind of put you in a downer kind of mood after a while. But I like Always Sunny a lot. I don't watch it a ton, but there was a period in college where I would watch it every day in the morning as I was making breakfast. That was like my morning routine.
Wow, what a way to start your day. That's so aggressive.
I had all of my classes starting at like 1 p.m. or later. So I was starting my day at like 11.
Okay, I was thinking like 7:30 a.m.
No, absolutely
You're
not.
You're watching the gang solve the gas crisis. Like, oh my God.
No, but I really like Always Sunny. It's not one of those shows that I've watched every episode of or have binged a whole bunch or watched even a lot of. But there are episodes that I come back to a bunch of times, including this one. This is definitely a top five episode.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I live in Philly, so it's fun to get that little atmosphere now. But to give a brief synopsis of this episode, Charlie stages a rock opera based on his song Nightman and recruits the rest of his gang to help him with it. Very succinct and very on the point. This episode had a lot of background info here, Liza. One of the things that I think would be interesting for you, because it was released in 2008, this is the last episode that they had as an aspect ratio of 4:3.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. I was thinking that as I watched it. I was like, huh, I haven't seen a 4:3 episode of It's Always Sunny in a minute.
Yeah.
But I think like there's something so charming about that 4:3 aspect ratio, especially when you consider sort of like the roots of this show. And, you know, the intro song is the only thing they could find for free. It's like shitty. And it's like clearly filmed from inside a car on a shitty camera.
Yeah, totally.
Like there is something sort of like a lot of the charm of this show, I think, especially in its early days, was the sort of feeling that five people got in a room and found a camera, or four people, I guess, most of the time.
Exactly right.
And so, yeah, there is something sort of charming to me about the 4:3 aspect ratio. I actually found myself missing it. I was like, wow, I preferred this for this show.
Yeah, it does give it a kind of like a grainier feel a little bit more old school for sure. This episode obviously is a musical episode. They have a bunch of songs, the iconic song being the Dayman song. But this actually isn't the first instance of the Dayman song. Did you know that, Liza?
No. I'm like, I've never watched this show like through. So wait, when did it happen before?
So season 3, episode 9 has a pretty bad title that I'm not going to say here. But in that episode, Charlie like makes a band with the rest of the gang. And like he and Dennis stumble upon like the song Dayman. And it's literally the exact same song, like exact same lyrics that they're singing. And because that episode got such a huge response in season 3, they were like, we should make a musical episode. And then over the course of season 4, they were like working on this whole episode, which is pretty incredible.
I love that. It's also very early in the run of this show that's now been on forever. I like jumped into Netflix thinking that this was going to be in season like 6 or 7 before I remembered just how early this happens. Like, this is such a big swing to take so soon, especially when you consider these are short seasons. These are like 12, 13 episode seasons.
Yeah. And this is the season finale. And exactly to your point, Liza, this is actually kind of the episode that really catapulted Always Sunny to be a mainstay show that has like a million seasons now. Obviously, they were successful before, but this, I think, really took it to the next level, which is pretty fun. I always love when a musical episode does that for a show.
I mean, I've seen, like, I went to a Halloween party a couple years ago, and I will always remember seeing the Dayman and the Nightman.
Yes. It's so good.
It's amazing. I mean, it's a really, it's one of the most iconic episodes of this show, which has many really fun episodes.
Mm-hmm. And following this episode too, they did a live tour. They went to 6 different cities. They like did a full show with 2 additional songs. I think there's a video of one of their performances in LA that I'm going to try to find so I can listen to those 2 extra songs. But it's pretty awesome how this really kind of struck the fan base, because I wouldn't suspect the fan base of Always Sunny being a group of people who love musicals, but I love that.
Yeah, that's really charming. I love that.
There's a bunch more behind the scenes stuff that I'll kind of pepper in throughout this episode, but the fun thing is that Charlie Day wrote most of this.
Really?
Yeah. And he's actually a really good musician. I've kind of been learning that like in the background a little bit, but he worked with the composer of the show, Cormac Bluestone, and they wrote the majority of the music. Kind of each member of the gang kind of pitched in with lyrics here and there, but this was really like Charlie's show.
I love that. I love that. And like the whole show does feel very true to Charlie, the character that he plays on the show. Like this does sound like Charlie is not a smart man. I mean, we do know he's illiterate and we do know that like he's pretty erratic and not fully there. I believe Artemis writes the book of the show.
Yeah, that's right.
Because his didn't have any words. But it does all feel like something that Charlie could have come up with. And he's not a Steven Schwartz or a Steven Sot. He's none of those Stevens, you know? He's a Charlie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the Charlie episodes are my favorite episodes of Always Sunny. I really love the Charlie Work episode. That might be my favorite of all
time,
where they do the Birdman kind of thing. Yeah.
Charlie,
it's so funny.
Charlie is absolutely fantastic. I do think Glenn Howerton occasionally steals entire episodes with one line delivery.
100%.
And so we mentioned the show is about like awful people, and I work in TV development a lot, and something that's always like, you know, we hear all the time, especially about women characters, is that they have to be likable. And I think I really sometimes appreciate that D sucks just as much as everyone else. I think it's really rare that women are allowed to be so shit.
Yeah.
She's just like
absolutely
a bad person. And it's not like apologetic about that. And there is something weirdly affirming about watching D also be a monster that I've always loved
like
about this show.
Yeah, equal opportunity shittiness.
Yeah.
You know?
She just also sucks. Like,
But yeah, so to get into the episode a little bit, the episode opens with Charlie coming in looking manic, as he always does, with just a bunch of loose papers saying he's writing a musical. The bit that I think Max says of, who are we doing it versus? Well, who's the mark is a thing that me and my friends say to each other all the time. Who are we doing it versus?
Well, yeah, they all want to know the motivation. And Charlie claims that you don't need motivation to write a musical. You can just do it, and distracts them all by threatening to give their parts away to other people. And since they're all egomaniacs, like, no, we'll do it. We'll do it. Don't worry.
I think that is such clever writing to me, by the way, of like immediately setting the premise of nobody wants to do it and flipping it immediately with just that pull of the ego. And it feels so believable in the show. That's so right for those characters. I love all of that.
It's really great. Yeah. Immediately sets the stakes for everyone, which is everyone's in it for themselves. Except, of course, we do learn that Charlie does have an ulterior motive.
Very specific ulterior motive. And we get straight to the rehearsals. Apparently they like did real rehearsals, right? Like they like actually took days off of the set and off of filming to like rehearse the show and stage it and block it. And that's going to do well in the commitment score. But I love that they did that in the first place.
I will say my favorite thing about the rehearsals is us just standing on black boxes. I kind of lost my mind.
There's a lot of things in that feel really authentic to me, like the chewing gum bit.
The chewing gum bit's good, yeah. So real. The Franks chewing some gum while they're trying to beat out the rhythm of the troll song, which we'll talk about.
And like Charlie yelling at a stage manager, yelling at Artemis, like that feels very real and lived in for community
Artemis,
theater.
A goddamn hero. Artemis is like one of my favorite like recurring people on It's Always Sunny. Like I'm always excited to see Artemis on an episode. And this is an excellent utilization of her as always.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic usage. I think we have to talk about the concept of like,
of the show, of the Nightman Cometh.
Yeah.
First of all, the Nightman Cometh is such a dumb and funny fucking name.
It's so funny. I mean, it's based on the Eugene O'Neill play, The Iceman Cometh.
Like, not right. to brag, but I did see Denzel Washington in that on Broadway. So I know the show.
I actually don't know the play that well at all, but I understand that it's about horrible people as well too.
It is. I mean, that's pretty much the only similarity to whatever Charlie.
But I mean, it's similar to the characters of Always Sunny in that they're alcoholics and do awful things and try to scam people.
That's true. Yeah, they're all monsters in Iceman Cometh. But yeah, no, the show Charlie has written is about a little boy, baby boy, tiny boy. But don't worry, that's a metaphor for his soul. He's a man.
It's interesting. We have to talk about the like rape joke of it all. There's a lot of mentions of rape here. And it's interesting to me because I really don't know where I fall on it. Charlie Day has this really great quote about this episode where he says, "A rape joke is not remotely a funny thing. A man writing a musical that he thinks is about self-empowerment and not realizing that all the lyrics sound like they're about a child being molested is a funny thing." And I think, you know, finding the comedy in the confusion is funny. I completely agree with that. But I don't know where I stand with just it, them mentioning rape so much in this show.
Yeah, I will say it's such a violent word and I always have such a visceral reaction to it. And I do agree with what Charlie Day said, but I also, honestly, and this will come up when we do vibe scores, but honestly, for me, it doesn't 100% outweigh just like the overuse of the word and the heavy reliance of this musical on it. It's still, yeah, I understand what he's going for. And to me, I think like when I think quote unquote, like rape joke, you know, a lot of the problem with them is that the victim is the joke and they're all about power and all about dominance. And that's not what this joke is about. Like he said, it's completely about like Charlie's blind confusion as to like the joke is the world Charlie lives in is not the real world.
Yes.
And like what to him is just like a man getting in bed with another man who has the soul of a boy and then like coming out the other side, he's becoming him. Like, it doesn't make any sense what Charlie's trying to do. And that's the joke, is that everybody else very clearly lays it out as a different kind of scene. To me, I don't know that there's, I think it's just still a little, I don't know. It doesn't quite sit right with me, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it doesn't for me either. And I think there is potentially another layer to it of like, I don't know if this is what Charlie Day is going for at all, but a kind of metacriticism about theater and the blasé-ness by which we like portray rape, and like a lot of the like Dennis and all the other people are like, oh yeah, so this is the rape scene and we'll just do this part, right? Because I feel like I've been in that experience in theater of like, shouldn't we be talking about this more delicately?
I totally, like West Side Story has like a really major rape scene in it. And I remember that like, people do that in high school, you know? I do think that the use of sexual violence in theater is a whole topic to unpack. I don't know that Charlie is attempting to unpack it at all. But it's also, it is worth mentioning that these are people, or at least I know in Glenn Howerton's case, have done like a lot of theater before. Like Glenn Howerton went to Juilliard. So I know he's done a bunch of theater, and these people, I mean, they play dumb people on the show, and all of these actors are really smart. So it's not out of the question. Yeah, Glenn Howerton going to Juilliard, that's like, you've heard like the Vanessa Carlton Thousand Miles thing, right?
Yeah, crazy.
Crazy. But yeah, so like Glenn Howerton went to Juilliard at the same time as a few other people, but when Vanessa Carlton was going to the American School of Ballet, which if you've been to New York, those things are very close together. And she's claimed in interviews that she wrote the song 1,000 Miles about a Juilliard student that she had a crush on that she never went up to or anything. And there's basically just a non-zero chance that it's Glenn Howerton. Like, she said that there was like, they're a famous actor now, so she didn't want to say their name. It's also Vanessa Carlton's bi, so it could have been loads of people like Marina Baccarin and Alan Tudyk and like Lee Pace and Anthony Mackie were running around. There were a lot of extremely attractive, very talented people at Juilliard, but there's a non-zero chance that that song is about Dennis, and that makes me really happy. I love that.
That's really nice, especially juxtaposed to all those people who are probably, I would say, objectively hotter.
Oh my God, yeah. But it's not zero.
It's very good. One thing that I really love about this episode is that we get right into the musical. I mean, like, even in the rehearsal, we hear, you know, snippets of it, but we get, like, I think it's, like, halfway into the episode, we're already starting the show, which is great. They're really trying to get us to the show as soon as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One side note I wanted to mention, too, in, like, the mania of, like, the backstage before they start the show, Charlie brings on Gladys, who's going to do the piano for the show. Apparently, that actress, everybody was like, she's so nice. She was super funny. She was so kind. She didn't follow any ounce of the script at all and just kept saying some wild stuff about Calvin Coolidge. And
oh my God, is that why they do the weird joke? It's like, you've told me that like 100 times.
Exactly. And she like just would just completely start talking about whatever. And I love that. I think that's great.
That's really great. I love Gladys. A hero. Comes a hero. In and I guess sight reads the entire musical.
Let's get into that first song for real. Tiny Boy, Little Boy, Baby Boy.
Okay, we also just have to address that Dee is a princess who works in a coffee shop. Like, yeah, a non- it's so funny. Charlie is, of course, in love with the waitress, who he's very weird and creepy about. It's slightly, it's your conscience can be mollified by the fact that it is his real life wife that he's acting opposite. But yeah, so Dee is a princess who works in a coffee shop who is in love with the soul of a boy inside the body of a man.
Thanks for keeping it straight, Liza. We need that.
But yeah, the lyrics for this song are like, what is this strange feeling? I feel so strange inside. It's strange, but also appealing. Like,
it's very good. I like, hot take here. Obviously, there's more famous songs from this, but I think this is the best written song in the show. The music is phenomenal. It's a waltz. They've got like syncopation with the melodies. There's triplets in there. It's like kind of really fun and good. And I should mention there's an Always Sunny podcast where they have Lin-Manuel Miranda on the episode and they talk about this episode. It's fantastic. Huge. Everybody should
get.
Listen
Why
to
didn't
it.
We get him for this?
Why didn't we get him? Hey, Lin. But they talk about how this song is supposed to be like kind of like a Sondheim song. And it totally is Into the Woods sounding if you break it apart like that. And Charlie has a whole segment where he plays it on piano in the podcast, and it's very good, and he's very talented, apparently.
No, it is a good song. The, like, vocals on it are not great, but there's no reason that Dee or Dennis should be good singers. So, again, we're totally fine with that. But, yeah, the lyrics are basically tiny boy, little boy, baby boy, I love you. There's a whole thing about being the boy inside you. It's very upsetting. The joke is just that Charlie does not understand that this has very sexual undertones to everyone else.
I think the interesting thing, though, is that like these lyrics are obviously very juvenile and not very good, but they are very earnest. Like, I think that is how Charlie kind of sees the world and thinks and feels about other people, which is kind of sweet and sad.
I kind of think you're right. Charlie is a simple, simple man.
He's a simple, simple man.
Simple brain, just steeped in chaos. Like,
and much like his character, too, I love that on this podcast, he's talking about this music that he wrote, and he doesn't know the terminology for any of the chords that he's playing. And, you know, people be like, oh, yeah, that's like, you know, a major seven, that's very Sondheim. And he's like, yeah, I don't know what that means at all. And that's very, it feels very like Charlie in a fun way.
That's very correct. Yeah. I mean, the song immediately after this is Dee coming back on stage to sing a song a cappella that she's making up. That's just to be clear, I've never had sex with a child. And like most adult men think I'm an 8 or a 9 out of 10.
So good. So good. I love how bad Dee is at singing here.
Yeah, it's great. Like, she's clearly, I mean, obviously, you know, Caitlin Olsen isn't, but it comes up as very clearly Dee making it up on the spot because she is panicked. Again, because they are not, nobody is in this to help Charlie, right? They are all in this for themselves. And Dee is already stuck in a princess costume under an apron where she can't even raise her hands above her head.
yeah, she really can't. She really can only lift it so far.
It's so
which
funny.
Also felt
it works
very
every
real.
Time.
I also love in between these two songs, they play like the little playing off music in between the scene transitions. That also felt very familiar and good. Yeah, I while Dee is singing the song here, we cut to Mac and Dennis talking about the show so far. And I love the line of Mac saying, laughs are cheap, I'm going for gasps.
And then, of course, everybody does laugh at Mac.
Immediately laughs at Mac.
His conception of the Nightman is a man who, like, does karate all the time and has cat eyes. And so comes on stage and he hisses like he's in fucking Cats or something. So of course
I will
people
say,
laugh.
Though, he moves on the stage really well.
Mac is a mystery of a man. Unknown depths.
So another fun fact, apparently the audience for this show is just 100 background actors that they hired for this shoot that didn't know anything going into it. So all of those reactions are genuine. I don't know if the laughs are genuine. They might have like cut stuff, but like when they cut to scenes of the audience and you see people confused or like half smiling, that's all authentic.
That feels right. Yeah, I was wondering that because you do look out on the audience. Of course, we're doing this show for the waitress who Charlie has promised if she comes to this, he will leave mm-hmm. her alone for the rest of her life. Something that she would deeply love because Charlie...
Huge stakes, actually.
Yeah, Charlie is a menace. so she comes to the show, but yeah, there are, I guess, 100 other people there. They're of all like ages and they're just like confused. There's like a sense of bewilderment among the audience, which is correct for this show, I think.
It's honestly an amazing turnout. I don't know how Charlie made that happen.
It's great. Yeah, I have no idea either because his entire, the only like PR we see him doing for the show is accosting the waitress on her way to work. I really thought she was going to be the only member of the audience.
Yeah, I bet he just paid everybody to show up. Probably I think that's true. What it was.
Probably true. Probably said they could all get like free drinks at Patty's for the rest of the night if they came to this. Exactly. You know?
Exactly. But to get back to the musical, Troll Toll is up next. Just an iconic bit of lyrics for sure from this one. Danny DeVito is, I think, in my mind, perfectly bad and off rhythm for a lot of this song in a way that's very good. We know he can do music. We've seen Hercules.
Yeah, we love but, Danny DeVito in this house. There would be no Danny DeVito slander. This is 100%. Not the place for that. I would argue there's no place for that in my life or in anyone's. we love Danny DeVito here. Yeah, so the lyrics are, you gotta pay the troll toll to get into this boy's soul. What Frank is clearly saying is you gotta pay the troll toll to get into this boy's hole. Very different.
It's a very good joke. It's objectively a good, like, mispronouncing the lyrics joke. And it is in that kind of gray area of, like, does Frank know what he's doing or does Frank really not know what he's doing at all?
Yeah, really impossible to know here. An unanswerable question.
And I love that he's so excited to play the troll. Like, that's
the troll whose
good,
name is Antonio, which I like always forget until like so Dennis like kills the troll in the next scene with a gun. It was so stupid.
You know what it is, bitch.
But he says, I'm not your bitch anymore, Antonio. He just, like, names the troll for the first time.
Yeah, it's so good. There's, like, some really good prop work here as well, too, of the gun just
being handed out the door. So good. And then taken back away. The set is also, like... shitty in a very delightful way. Like, there's almost like a German expressionist like Hamnet of Dr. Caligari thing happening. But really it's probably Charlie not being able to paint straight lines.
Exactly. And it's supposed to be Charlie and Frank's bedroom too, right? Yeah. Like, I think that's really fun as well. Yeah, and there's like so many details like that with the prop and the sets, and like when they cut to black every time, the kind of like awkward shuffling to get off stage and how long they take to do anything correctly.
Their transitions are terrible. Like, they clearly really did not do like just one of those horrible transition runs of a show where you just, oh God, that's like grueling tech rehearsals. That has clearly not happened for this particular show.
Not at all. But I mean, I think it has happened for this cast to make it look like it's not
these
bad.
Are,
and I think that's
again,
really awesome.
To me, that also rings, and we've talked about this, I think we talked about this in the context of the Office episode, actually, that there are moments of authenticity here that ring of people who've done theater. Yeah. And in this version, they're doing intentionally the wrong things, but it's people who know what the wrong things are, like long, awkward transitions.
And then the whole part with Mac and Dennis, like Mac forgets a line and Dennis is like, dude, you're skipping a line. It's crazy how much better I am at acting than you are, like saying that on stage. It's so good. It's no, don't just, improv.
Like, it's crazy to me that this is like the hero of the show and he just shoots the troll. Like, there have been no guns. This is such a crazy escalation. He doesn't like overpower the troll in any way. He just takes a gun that's handed to him and shoots Antonio. And also, we have to mention, just his outfit is the stupidest thing I've ever laid eyes on.
So, first off, it's not Chekhov's gun, it's Charlie's gun for this show. And second of all, that outfit is in that season 3, episode 9 episode when they have that band. It's the exact same outfit when they're singing Day
Man. Got it. Because it's a jockstrap on top of an ill-fitting spandex silver one piece.
Like, listen, I didn't say it made sense. I'm just connecting the dots
it's
here.
It's insane to look at.
And then we get the breakaway hit. We get Dayman. Mm-hmm. Once he does the slowest costume change ever.
And then this very strange stage combat where he defeats the Nightman.
I mean, it's a very dumb, dumb set of lyrics that really, really works for me. And it is so much worse an octave down and so much better when Dennis goes the octave up. And his voice sounds really great. And the ahs are iconic.
Yeah, this is a deeply iconic song. I feel like we should just play a little bit of it because there's no way for us to convey what this song is without that.
Dayman. Ah, fighter of the Nightman. Ah, champion of the sun. Ah, you're a master of karate and friendship for everyone.
Dayman.
Thank you, Olivia. But that is not the final number of the show, much to the cast's surprise.
It's not.
Charlie lowers from the ceiling. I didn't know we had a full fly system in this theater.
Incredible.
We only have Artemis on the fly, so I hope she doesn't drop Charlie. Charlie comes in the sun. To propose to the waitress. And that is the reveal of his real ulterior motive for putting on this show, as mentioned in the top. So, full circle.
This melody line is so needlessly complicated. Like, it is, you know, ducking and weaving, going up and down like crazy, hitting like falsetto notes that don't need to be there at all. At first I thought it was a mess, and then I had to listen back to it again, and I was like, actually, is this tasteful? Like, is it just that Charlie is singing it in an outrageous way that makes it sound extra bad? But if we strip away all of this and just look at the notes and the chords, this is actually kind of clever and good. He gives like a little bit of Jack Black energy, I feel like, in this song.
A little
bit.
You know? There's a little bit of Tenacious D energy here, Petra's energy.
I really love the lyric, "Will you come on stage and join me in this thing called matrimony? Please say yes and do not bone me." It's very
good. Again, these are Charlie lyrics. They're direct. We've addressed in this episode that he doesn't know what a metaphor is.
And I want to point out again, the whole part where the waitress says no and walks out and they have that whole kind of like discussion while he's on stage. All of those audience reactions are authentic.
Oh my God,
like,
that's so
this
good.
Is people seeing this happen.
It's so uncomfortable because obviously the waitress says no. Obviously. Of course she does.
And obviously Charlie goes back on his word too.
Obviously, he's a bad person. Like, in what universe was he going to keep that promise, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in a classic It's Always Sunny style, we're sort of left at the same set of circumstances as we were at the top of the episode. But there is like, it is a delightfully uncomfortable moment when Charlie is just on stage like, you can all leave.
All right, show's over.
Show's over, you can all go.
It's so funny. The only other thing that this is like a completely random thing that I forgot to mention, your girl Artemis apparently for these extras like went up on the stage before the show started and like said where the fire exits were and gave like a little talk, like did a whole stage manager spiel before the show went on, which I think is a very funny detail.
That makes me really happy. That feeds my soul in some way. I love that.
But yeah, do you have any other notes before we get into the scores for this one?
No, I think we got it all out. We just got to score this thing.
All right, to score this thing, we alluded to this before. The general vibe category comes first. This is how it aged, the problematic stuff, but also, was it a good time? Did we have fun? It's tough because it's yes and no to these things.
This is really hard because, as you said, this is like one of the most iconic episodes of It's Always Sunny. It's also one of my favorites. Actually, it was funny when I went into Netflix Watch This, as I said, I thought it was later in the series. And then I realized that Netflix had tried to start me on season 5, episode 1, because the last episode I watched was this episode.
Amazing.
Like,
amazing.
I watched it a bunch of times and it's really great. The inclusion of like the sexual violence in jokes, even if that's not what the joke is about, you could easily argue, does not sit well with me, never has, and frankly never will. So there's that. I mean, that's the big obstacle for me, because for this show, again, like, part of the vibe is that they're all monsters, they're terrible people, and they will never grow. They will never learn. They will never become better. That's part of the ethos of this show. Mm-hmm. I do, I guess, appreciate that even Dee draws a line at being seen as a pedophile. But again, that's about her. That's not about anything. That's about her wanting to let men in the audience know that she's not a pedophile and that she's available.
It's incredibly low bar.
Incredibly low bar. So yeah, for me, that does take away from this, unfortunately.
It's tough because I do have this kind of bias in my head where I know if I'm walking into an Always Sunny episode, I am not going to like a handful of things that happen. Like, I just know that walking into it. And I think if this showed up on another show, I would be way more critical of it. But like you were saying, because it's a little bit of the ethos of the show that this, they're going to be awful people and saying awful things or being blasé about serious things, it changes things a little bit. All that to say, I love this episode. I still think it probably gets like a 7 or a 6 and gets docked points for the problematicness of it.
I'm good with a 7, I think. Like, I still enjoy it. I still have a good time. There's just a bad taste in my mouth when that particular conversation is happening.
I agree completely.
All right. 7. So music.
All original music.
All original. Our friend Charlie Day.
It is interesting because the music is bad on purpose for a good number of it. But I do really like a lot of the melodies that come up from this. I really, really like the baby boy one. I think that one
it gets stuck in my head, for better or for worse. But it is actually all really catchy, which is strange.
My biggest gripe is that we don't really get harmony in this. We get harmony. I'm just a harmony guy, and we get like one line of harmony in Dayman at the very end. If you're going to put harmony anywhere, I guess it should be in that last number, but still. We get like a little bit of counterpoint in the baby boy song, but
yeah,
it kind of gets
lost.
Dennis
going ooh oh.
Well, so the ooh ah is great. That let's not get this twisted. That is genius, and it is very good. Also, just in a syncopation way, because every beat is off of the other beat of the melody, and it's also in a waltz, and so that does interesting things with timing and numbers. But the counterpart where like right before the very end, Dee has this really awesome line of the like, boy, oh boy, oh boy thing. And Dennis has another line that just gets completely lost during that. So that's not great. But all that to say, I do like a lot of that song. I just wish there was more harmony. That's kind of my big thing with this episode overall.
Sure. And by necessity, the orchestration's really simple, right? Like, it's just an upright piano. That's just built into universe. And again, like, we are sort of running into this slight hurdle of a character is supposed to have written this and not a particularly bright character. So it can't be too good. They have to like cap it at a certain level of good.
No, that's right. And it does sound like Charlie wrote this. And I am like a little bit pleasantly surprised at how good Charlie, the character, wrote this. And I think that's believable and real. And I think that's good.
Totally. Because for all that Charlie is a monster, he does sort of have a soft underbelly that makes him kind of endearing. And it is that like very naive way of seeing the world that he has. And I think there is something sort of joyful in his music.
I feel like a 9. I really like it.
Yeah, I can give it a 9.
Lyrics, kind of the same problem.
Yeah.
So yeah. Dumb, but they're so good that they're so dumb.
Yeah, they're really funny. I mean, they just went all in for it. You're rhyming the same word with the same word. Like, you're rhyming words with themselves. I love it when that happens. The lyrics are extremely simple, very direct.
I, like, would love to figure out the thought process that gets "you're a master of karate and friendship for everyone." Like, that is brilliant in a way that I can't understand, really.
I think about it all the time, and that's not an exaggeration.
Because it is like a child's like television show, if they had like a theme song for mm-hmm. this action show, would do something like that, but not as egregious as that. But it's in the ballpark, and I just don't know how they come up with this, and it's kind of brilliant.
It honestly does kind of sound like a 7-year-old wrote it. But it is delightful.
And you also get the Trolls Toll Boy's Soul whole do. Thing. Like, that, that's clever. Like, it's dumb as shit, but it's clever.
That is really where this show lives. That is the ethos of this entire show, where it's dumb as hell, but it is clever. It is funny. These actors are much smarter than their characters, and they're also, of course, the main writers of the show. So,
yeah, exactly.
They are very smart people playing very dumb people. Yeah, I'm tempted to give this like an 8.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
It's not doing anything hard, but it shouldn't, you know? I still, yeah. That was a nothing sentence, but you get me. Like, I just like said, sounds like, as if like sort of in the cadence of a sentence, and I was hoping that it would have a point, and it didn't, and that's fine.
Listen, I know it's our job to deconstruct these episodes. Sometimes it is really difficult to take away from lyrics like this, like how we're supposed
to
write.
What am I supposed to get out of it? What fucking insight can I make about tiny boy, little boy, baby boy? I can't tell you anything.
I could tell you it's really funny, and I couldn't have thought of it.
Exactly. Like, that's... So that's what you get. All right, dancing's up next. We do have some choreo.
We do. We have some fight choreo. Like, I know that's not dancing, but I feel like it's in a similar vein.
It is. It's still called choreography.
That's right.
So we get to include it. Yeah, I mean, I think my favorite thing about the choreography is when Dee can't raise her hands above her head.
It's very funny. It's very funny how not in sync everyone is anytime there's dancing.
No, they're all like, over the place. They all seem to be just making it up.
Yeah. Dennis and Dee are like straight up doing like a mirroring exercise, and they're stupid. Not doing it.
And they're like not
they're
doing
like
it
missing
correctly.
It completely. So definitely points for that. I think it's very minimal. I think they thought about the music and the lyrics and the like acting and the comedy of it way before they thought about the dancing.
And I think really, yeah, the dancing is there to underscore the comedy of it. And the way it's doing that is reminding you that these people would be terrible at dancing and thinking of choreography.
Yes.
There's nothing in any of these people's brains that would, maybe in Charlie's brain lends itself to music. None of these people know how to dance.
100%.
So it's just there to underscore comedic beats. You know, of course, we do some thrusting during, like, yeah. the being the boy inside you, right? Like, there are little moments, but it is not so in any way a centerpiece of this.
Yeah, I'm feeling like a 6. I think it's just on the positive side, but there's not much more to say on that.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think a 6 works. Okay, so performance. I mean, this is vocal and acting performance together. I mean, it's again, I mean, as we just said, there's no reason for any of these people to be good at this at all.
Yeah.
There are a lot of mistakes made and like some really middling vocal work, but it works really well. Like, the actors themselves are doing incredible work.
Yes, pure acting, it's a 10.
Yeah,
the vocal performance being bad kind of lends itself to the acting performance.
No, it's great.
You know?
I mean, again, like, it's crazy that Glenn Howerton does have the range that he has.
Yeah.
And it's really funny, and it works when Dennis jumps up an octave as like a show-offy, really dish thing to do.
And he does sound good. He really does have a great tone.
Which is like perfect for Dennis. Like, he's allowed to be a little bit good at this in a really annoying way. Like, that totally works.
My favorite bits are when they're singing in unison and like one person is finding the note and then they eventually get there and are singing in unison together. Like, that feels so authentic to me. And in any other context, I'd be so frustrated. But
totally.
Really,
and it feels under rehearsed in a way where like, I know it isn't, but they've pulled they've pulled off under rehearsed so well.
It really feels like everybody's singing Happy Birthday, you know? It's like one of those.
It's one of those like, oh no, we forgot how high this song goes and we started it in too high a key.
Exactly.
Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
You know? I'm gonna say performance is pretty high. It's like pretty thinking an 8 or a 9 on this.
Yeah, I'm thinking a 9. I mean, I think it's really strong. There's no moment where I'm taken out of it by anything anyone on screen is doing. I think they're all really, I mean, they live and breathe these characters so well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, writing.
Yeah, the writing's pretty tight for me. You know, to like get through the exposition with a lot of jokes in the first 10 minutes so you can spend the remaining 10 minutes just doing the musical straight through, I think is a pretty good feat.
Mm-hmm.
I think also, it's interesting to think about writing in the context also of Charlie writing the book of his play, which doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah, doesn't make sense at all. Is only words writing? Because Artemis is there. Was apparently just like drawings before.
Yeah. You wrote Soul, not Whole, right?
Yeah. She's like, no, I definitely wrote Soul. And I believe her. I believe Artemis had it right. This is all Frank. This is all
100%.
Frank. Yeah, the writing for the show is always really tight. The show has a very fast pace. It is literally, in this episode, people competing for airtime in a way that is, like, again, in large doses for me, completely intolerable. This is, like, the opposite energy of most ensemble comedies.
Yeah.
Where they're actively fighting each other 99% of the time.
And I like that every character gets their own thing going on. Like, they have their own motivations that get their own payoffs and jokes in the show. And it doesn't feel like anyone's missing out.
No, totally.
In a way.
I really appreciate that scene where Dee complains about the Tiny Boy, Little Boy, Baby Boy song, and Charlie just threatens to cut it. You know, it is really funny. It just works. This is also, of course, all why he's like yelling at Artemis and Dennis has gone to eat food because he's uncomfortable. Like, it's a really solid scene. It works so well. Yeah, the writing on It's Always Sunny is really, really tight. It has been for many years, which is part of why they've been able to maintain that show for so long.
I think my trouble is that I don't know what more I want from the writing in this episode. You know what I mean? I don't think there's anything that's like crazy blowing me away, but it's solid. Like, I don't really have any notes.
Same. I think it's really solid. I don't think it's doing anything new for the show, but I don't think it has to.
So maybe like an 8 or a 9 for this one as well?
Yeah. Let's give it an 8.5.
Yeah, I like that.
Cool.
We love an 8.5 on this show.
We love an 8.5. I'm looking at this column. Like, oh, no. Okay. Next up is direction. So this is the blocking, the framing, the editing. As we kind of mentioned, this is the last episode in that 4-3 aspect ratio.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like I said before, like, the intro to this show is like so clearly shot from the window of a moving car. There is something about this show that lends itself to like quote unquote bad framing, right? Like, mm-hmm. even when we get into like, we start in Patty's pub for our scene where Charlie rushes out with all of his chaotic notes and claiming he's written a musical. And like, Mac and Dennis are like behind the pool table on the mm-hmm. other side. not centered, but not quite in a third either. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of weird things that go on with, like, the framing of this show, where it, again, it has maintained this feeling of, like, just people with a camera that I think the humor of it is really reliant on, and it ends up being a strong directorial choice, but looks really unintentional. Like, I guess the theme of, honestly, this episode is the show is shitty in a very intentional way.
yeah. It feels very intentional when you're looking back at it. Like, it's easy to not focus on it at all and just let it hit you. But when we're, like, actively watching this episode looking for things, you're like, wow, that was a specific choice they made to, like, frame it this way, huh?
Yeah.
You don't really notice it.
They frame things in very specific ways that you wouldn't necessarily notice on first glance. And they, you know, cameras are shaky. We are weirdly in a wide shot when in any other show we'd be in a medium to a close-up. Mm. There's, like, a lot of that kind of thing going on. Angles are strange and kind of odd. Like, that angle down on the waitress is so odd because it's, like, from whose perspective, right? Like, there's a lot of shots like that where it's like, why am I looking at this way? Like, but it has become such a part of the show's voice in a way that is, to me, inextricable from the show. Like, if this show was shot in, because essentially this is a sitcom, right? Like, we open, this is like if Cheers was terrible. If this were shot in the style of a Cheers, that would be crazy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that'd be insane. It wouldn't fit the tone at all.
It wouldn't fit this at all. So, I do think the direction is more thoughtful than it appears.
Yeah. On another point, too, I always think it's really hard to film stage stuff. Like, anything on stage always looks weird and awkward. I think they did a pretty good job with this, right? Like, I got to see everything that I needed to see in each shot. So kudos to them on that. I think it's, you know, not anything greater than The Office episode, but I think The Office episode also did a good job of showing the stage.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, I think like a 7, maybe?
Yeah, I think a 7 sounds good. All right, commitment. I mean, how much do they commit? I think pretty hard.
Yeah. I mean, I think just from all of the behind-the-scenes stuff I learned about it, too, not only were they, like, eager to do this, but, like, they put in the work to, like, really make it feel like theater in a way that I think is fun. You know, obviously, it's a different type of weaving it into the plot than, like, a Buffy or a Star Trek where, like, the musical is happening to the characters.
Sure.
But I don't think that takes away from the commitment.
Yeah, I think this is about as committed as you can be in a world where you actually can't just make people start singing. When you're doing the show as a show within a show, this is as much commitment as you can possibly do, really, I think. Yeah, for me, this is pretty high. I mean, also, you know, we had one of our main writers / cast members who wrote it, which is, I think, huge. And it's a season finale. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of don't see a world where this isn't a 10 for me.
Yeah. Same.
Cool. Yeah.
And it's technically 5 songs in, you know, a 20-minute episode. Like, that's a lot.
It's pretty impressive. A lot of them are about like 60 seconds long.
Yeah.
But, I mean, also, do we count? I mean, I meant to ask this at the top, really, but do we count when Charlie walks in at the top of the show as the first number?
So I think no, because it's too short and too a cappella. You know what I mean? That's how I'm looking at it. It doesn't feel like an opening number to me. that makes a lot of sense to me.
Cool.
Stakes. This one's interesting, right?
We
talked about this a bunch with the kind of like return to zero format of these shows. I think the stakes are interesting in that Charlie does pose high stakes and then immediately walks back on them.
Yeah. Of course he would, though. But yeah, Charlie proposes the high stakes of this episode. He proposes. So
yeah.
The stakes for Charlie are high, but he immediately undoes all of it about 20 seconds later when he doesn't get the answer he wants. There are very few things on It's Always Sunny that run for multiple episodes or require any sort of serial knowledge of the show. That's sort of the way, I mean, mm-hmm. it's a sitcom, that's the way it's built. I mean, there are a few characters, Rickety Crickets comes to mind, where you probably need to know what happened last time you saw him in order to understand yeah. where he's at now, right? Or when Rob McElhenney's insane weight fluctuations happen.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
bone chilling, actually, and terrifying, and makes you worry about him and his cardiac health. But
yeah, 100%.
There's very little that you have to know in between episodes of the show. They mm-hmm. do have to keep it that way. But yeah, I don't know what to say, because the stakes are high right up until the last minute.
Yeah. And also all that to say that, like, you know, it's hard to judge these things that don't change too much, but they do change some things sometimes. So they could have done that with this episode. But, you know, understanding that it's super rare is also good context. I think for me, I think it feels like more stakes than a regular Always Sunny episode. And I also think this might not be in this category here, but we do talk about the stakes of an episode being like, can I skip this episode? Like, you know, is this episode really like a showstopper episode? And I think this is arguably the most famous episode of
Always
Sunny.
That's true. Yeah.
So it feels like you can't miss it. I am tempted to give this like a 7.
I love a 7.
A 7 is our I don't know answer, but
yep,
we liked
but
it.
But we love it. Okay, the last and arguably most difficult score is our personal ranking. As always, you and I will both give a number. We will average those numbers. That's about as much math as actually happens on our show.
We total the numbers, too.
Well,
there
the,
is
the
a sum
spreadsheet
that
does that, though, because I made the spreadsheet do that.
Okay, but just because a spreadsheet does it doesn't mean that math is not happening.
That's true. That's true. I program the math. I'm essentially a coder.
Whoa.
Anyway, okay. So
I have my number.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, I think I have mine too. Ready? 3, mm-hmm. 2, 1, 9.
Eight.
Oh,
wow.
There we go. An 8.5.
Our favorite 8.5.
All right, that puts The Nightman Cometh at a solid 80, a nice round number, which never
Love
happens
that.
On this show. We've upset our top 5.
Mm-hmm.
This is now sitting at number 4. So right after Subspace Rhapsody, Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and right before My Musical from Scrubs, knocking The Flash out of the top 5.
Yeah, I just got there, too.
Oh, God, barely by 1 point.
By 1 point.
Oh, man. Or no, sorry, that's not true. By like 2 points, but still, it's extremely
yeah, yeah,
close.
Yeah.
The point is, I think that race for 3 through 5 is the tightest.
Yes, 100%.
Very few points separate those positions at this time.
Yep. Next week, we actually won't see you once more because we'll be taking a week break and then returning with our last 2 episodes of the season. On May 13th, we'll see season 5, episode 1 of Bob's Burgers, entitled Work Harder or Die Trying Girl.
You can find this episode on Hulu.
Thank you to Olivia Brasovsky, our angelic audio architect, and to Sakana Powell, our magnificent marketing maven.
If you like the show, please be sure to rate and review us. And if you don't, keep it to yourself. You can find us on Instagram at Once More with TV or contact us using the information in the show notes.
And scene.